ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानं जनशलाकया चाक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रं मत्र स्वरूपम् रूपं तस्याग्रजमरुपुरीं माधुरीं गोष्ठावतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरं महो राधिकमधावशं प्राप्तो यस्या प्रतीत्यकृपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानं पवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः निखिलाश्रुतिमाले रत्नमालयते निराजिता पदपङ्कजन्त आजि मुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनुं परितस्त्वं हरिणं संश्रयामि अनारपितचरीं चिरात् करुणयावतीर्णाकलुः समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरतसुन्दरादियुतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये खन्दरेष्पुरतो वासचिनन्दना जानुलम्बिता भुजो कनका वदतु सङ्कीर्तनायकपितरो कमलायतक्ष विश्वाम्बरो द्वियावरो जुगधार्मपाल वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो लालिनीशक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गसुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिव्रदनाय गदाधर नमस्तुते हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपीककान्त राधाकान्त नमस्तुते राधे बृन्दवनादिशे करुणामृतवाहिनि कृपया निजपादब्ज दर्शन मह्यं प्रदीयतम् भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षाय क्षिप्तशाखमादित्यरङ्गमाद्य कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपानं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम् श्री सच्चिदानन्द गौर हरि की जय श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जय श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद गौर गदाधर जी की जय श्री श्री आदमान मोहन राधा गोविंद देव राधा गोपीनाथ जी की जय गौर भक्त वृंद की जय गौर प्रेमानंद हरि 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 बोल सो अगेन प्रणाम टू ऑल ऑफ यू वेलकम थैंक यू सो मच फॉर बीइंग पार्ट ऑफ this radical personalism retreat, which is officially beginning now. of course, as you know, this was a book before called Radical Personalism, and now we have a book made into a retreat. Before it was a series of classes made into a book, now the book made into a retreat. Let's see what comes next. But yeah, we have different iterations of the same spirit, so to say, right? So I'm very excited, as all of us are, hopefully, for seeing what comes from the alchemy of all of us together for these days, including those who are visiting us for the day. Hopefully we can all get different glimpses of what radical personalism means, which for me, of course, is just another way of speaking about Gaudiya Vaishnavism, speaking about our tradition as personally as possible. We are already persons, but how much of a person we can be? That's a big question and a big answer waiting for that question. So today we have a main topic, as we know. But first of all, I'd like to share a few words in terms of a retreat. Like, why a retreat? Why do we need retreats? If we need retreats. And if so, why, right? So I agree. I am of the opinion we need retreats. That we are why we are here, because retreats can convey a particular type of experience. No? We have been talking about Shabda, Anuman, and Pratyaksha many times. These three ways of deriving knowledge: Shabda by hearing, revelation; Anuman by inference and thinking; And a pratyaksha means direct experience, personal experience. And Srila Sanatana Goswami says that's the most important of all pramanas, of all ways of ascertaining reality. Personal experience is our ultimate pramana. Even when we say, we will talk about that more tomorrow, but briefly, even when we say the revealed knowledge and scripture is the ultimate source of evidence, in one sense, yes, but in one sense, my experience of that is the ultimate source of evidence. Because if I have no experience of that, how much will I take that seriously to begin with? How much will I take revealed knowledge as revealed knowledge? If I'm open to accept that as revealed knowledge, it's because I have some experience that lends me to think, okay, that's something to take seriously. So in that sense, experience is very important. It's very special experience guided by revelation, which somehow nourishes our faith. So that's what we are trying to experience these days, to have some, hopefully, realization in bhakti. It's very important that we can move in life through realization. Without realization, the practice risks becoming formulaic, mechanical. He wants to leave or? Okay. Some stretching, yeah, of course, he needs. So realization comes by practice, as we hear, ideally by practice, a committed practice, concentrated practice during some period of time, hopefully in the company of like-minded people. So that's basically what we are trying to bring together these days here. No? Like-minded people, kindred spirits, getting together in one single space, our one same room, trying to immerse ourselves in a particular type of reflection, meditation, and collective introspection. So for me, this is one of the reasons why retreats are important. Also, retreats, I will say, give us a sense of community, no, a sense of family, a sense of belongingness or belonging. So we're talking all these days. No? We all need a feeling of community because we are, I mean, ontologically speaking, we are community. Nothing exists separated from Krishna. So in that sense, everything is community. There is a common unity, common unity with a common center. So metaphysically speaking, that's a fact. No? But if we do not experience that in how we relate to others, to each other, that may be difficult for us to live in that spirit of community. So something, a belonging, no? Belonging that I belong to something greater than myself. We all belong to something that is bigger than ourselves. That type of epiphany is so necessary. So hopefully retreats like this can provide that. Because when we have a glimpse of we belong to something bigger by myself, it's way easier to let go selfishness. No? Because selfishness is basically, I cannot see something bigger than myself. And we are not stigmatizing those who are selfish because who is free from that? So the best way to counteract selfishness is just to experience something bigger than yourself and understand that that's bigger enough for everyone to belong to it. So when that happens, when you're having that experience, it makes no sense being selfish. It just makes no sense. So it's like, I probably say, I have tasted the higher taste, I can let go of the lower one, naturally, without an effort. I belong to something greater. I belong to something bigger. So that's the idea of Sangha. In Sanskrit, you have the two words Sangha and Sangha. Sangha and Sangha with H after the G. So Sangha with H is community. And Sangha without age means like association or sometimes attachment. In the Bhagavad Gita, as we describe Sadhu Sangha sometimes. So I would say that Sangha has to create Sangha, no? Like association has to create community. No? In other words, getting together has to bring us to that point where we realize we all belong to something greater, to ourselves. And that way the two words, no, are tied to one another. No? Because if not, Sadhu Sangha ends up being just like a crowd stuff, a bunch of people getting together, a social phenomenon, no? Gossip dynamics probably sometimes. But we need Sangha. We need that to create Sangha or community or a sense of we all belong to something common. We are all under the umbrella of something bigger than ourselves, which is bigger in terms of beauty, love, harmony, compassion, and so many other things. So, and that's for me the beginning of love. Also, our goal is love. We love to talk about love and Prem Bhakti Ki Jai, but the beginning of love is community. One said the beginning of love is cooperation, learning to cooperate with one another, as basic as that sounds. That's the first, one of the first ways I can show that I'm interested in love. If I'm interested in loving you, I will be interested in cooperation. No? And that's for me the idea of Sankirtan. No, Sankirtan is the main practice, in one sense, the religion of Mahaprabhu, so to say, of our tradition. But Sankirtan means, as I always like to say, Sankirtan by definition implies you cannot do that by yourself. It's a group effort, congregational praise of God. Sangha Kirtan. So by definition, it says this is a practice that you cannot engage in it in isolation. You cannot do it yourself. You need others. You need each other. So it sets that ground. We need each other to do Sankirtan. If not, we cannot do Sankirtan. We can do some Kirtan. But Sankirtan, that's something different. Everyone can do some Kirtan. You pick portals, go. And that's fine. I'm not downplaying that. I'm not downplaying your solitary plane of portals in your local cave. But Sankirtan implies collective effort. And the effort is not just let's get the physical bodies together in one room, but it's let's cooperate. And cooperate in which way? Okay, we sing the names of God, or we are sharing like now. Let's cooperate in the way that our own separate agenda doesn't get in the way of what we want to make all together. No, let's leave our shoes outside of the room, meaning let's leave outside of this sacred space the way we used to walk life in a selfish way. Or, you know, let's leave the shoes outside. That's the meaning. It's not just in terms of cleaning, keeping the room, not ruining the carpets, but it's like, the shoes represent the way we walk and how we walk in an ordinary way. Let's put that aside and let's enter into sacred space. And hopefully when we put our shoes back, we continue walking in that sacred space, so to say, right? So again, the idea is that we can get together in a in a sacred way. Don't get together not just merely a crowd, merely a social dynamic, but sangha, community, intimate family, tribe, hopefully. All that is crucial for Sankirtan, crucial for our practice, crucial for for having a glimpse of what it will lack in eternity, so to say. Because here we are being trained for eternity. And if we, as I always like to say, bhakti is something that we are doing now, is the means and it's a goal. We are doing bhakti and our goal is bhakti. So you are doing what you want to do for eternity. Right, we are not doing bhakti for mukti, bhakti for swarga, bhakti for who knows what. We are doing bhakti for the sake of bhakti. So I happen to be doing the very thing that I want to do forever. Wow, that's worthy of celebration. So, but I have to be doing in such a way that I'm okay doing that forever, right? I have to associate with each other in such a way that it makes sense. Okay, I like to continue with these guys for eternity, because if in the name of association I'm just promoting trauma and dysfunction, it's like, I don't want to be there in that situation forever. That sounds like hell. That's not heaven, right? So that's the idea, right? We want to have a glimpse of eternity, and if we are doing that properly, we are already there. No, that's our. Or like Srila Siddharth will say, Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. So if you are there, you are there. If you are there in consciousness, you are there. So if we are properly connecting with each other in the way that's possible in eternity, you're already there. And that's the idea. No? In this, hopefully in this week, we can have a glimpse, a trailer, an appetizer, you use the word you want. Maybe not only an appetizer, the full meal of eternity being served generously And we can, again, we can get this glimpse of, wow, this looks great. I want to hang out with these guys forever. That makes sense. Yeah, why not? And that becomes so inspiring for me that I start to live my life right now in that way. Not just, again, like I'm here and I'm waiting for eternity and things will happen differently. You don't need to wait for anything. You just need to live here and now in that same way, right? Fine-tuned with that reality. So a few words on why I think retreats are important, basically, right? Because they provide the experience of all the things we are talking about. Many times we've been talking about this so many times, but it may just remain theory. And when we had some like immersive experience all together for a week in one single place, sharing deeply, intensively, that provides an experience. It's experiential. No? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in verse 9, chapter 9, verse 2, Pratyaksha Bhagamam Dharmyam. Bhakti can be understood by personal experience. That's the only way you can make sense of bhakti. You need to have experiences that nourish your faith, confirm your path, confirm that you are in the right place, in the right time, with the right people. And if that's so right, that, again, I want to be doing this forever. And you stop caring for samsara and dying and being born and going to one place or not. You're already there. That's it. The rest is just celebrating salvation. Mm-hmm. Already came to you. Salvation is coming. Let's think about salvation came to you. Some people may need that. Yeah. So that's an introduction regarding why retreats. And I invite you to bring paper and pen, not necessarily to force you to take notes from my lectures. Of course, you're doing that and you're free for that. But also now I was thinking, before passing to the topic of today, we can spend a few minutes, each of you invited, to write what it means for you to be part of a retreat. I mean, please don't copy-paste Swami Padmanabha. And just what it means for you to be part of a retreat. So for 2, 3, 4 minutes, you can just write. And let's try to write without too much thinking in terms of writing in a fancy way. It won't be shared publicly, so you can just write and allow whatever comes to flow for 3, 4, 5 minutes, and then we will continue with our conversation. Okay, so having reflected for a few minutes, and of course you can continue then unfolding your thoughts eventually, no problem, but it's important to have a clear idea about the need of retreats, and not only this one, but periodically we may need to have some experience, hopefully close to these ones, to have reconnection, immersion, and recalculation, like the GPS, and go into back to proper perspective of so many things that inadvertently we may lose sight of. So that said, we are arriving to the topic of today's meeting. As you may, for those who have been yesterday, we've shared how the retreat will be framed according to 7 main themes of radical personalism. The book has this book, the third part of the book, we have made 7 chapters: vulnerability and empowerment, individuation, what else? Non-dual thinking, issues and tissues between guru and disciple. I'm going in order, sorry. Divine ignorance, contemplative prayer, and on earth in heaven. I mean, those are the titles of the chapter. So there are 7, so we'll touch upon each one of them each day. So today's the first topic, which is vulnerability and empowerment. It all begins with vulnerability. If we want something real to happen, so we have to introduce not only the retreat, but even ourselves, hopefully as vulnerably as possible. Like yesterday, we were given the example of the AA meetings, right? Here, I'm Michael. Hello, welcome. And I have a problem with alcohol, right? And Michael is not my name. I don't have a problem with alcohol. I'm just giving the example. I have many other problems. It's totally fine. I mean, sometimes alcohol is a minor problem, like in person. But the point is that you start the meeting by by being honest about who you are, and the meeting is named and framed for what it is. So in this case, we can say, yeah, here I am. I'm a soul who is vulnerable and needy of, in need of mercy and grace. Here I am. That's who I am. And I'm work in progress, and I'm trying to integrate my unredeemed part and disowned sections as a human in the service of my bhakti project. So it's like, okay, this is who I am, this is who we are, this is what we are about. So once the tone is set, it's realistic. What may come after that can be realistic. So that's why vulnerability, and that's why when I wrote those seven chapters, I felt, yeah, first has to come vulnerability. It's kind of, if I'm not being vulnerable, means I'm not showing myself for who I am. So what will follow after that? Just I put all the makeup and masks that I have at my disposal, what will come after that? So we want honesty and sincerity. And that's a vulnerability is required to deal. That's what it came to me when I wrote the book. If there's no vulnerability to begin with, we cannot deal with any other topic in any authentic way. So first, let's be authentic with who we are, and then we can be authentic about everything and anything else, right? So vulnerability is, it invites us to admit, to be okay with who we are, to be courageous enough to acknowledge, as we will talk today, our frailty or brokenness or unresolved issues, and to say after all that, and it's okay. Because as we will see today, Krishna loves you unconditionally. So all the elements have to be put on the scale. Not only you are broken and frail, end of the conversation, that can be a trauma in itself, but also not denying that thing altogether and trying to just show off in a very perfect way, which is too imperfect to do that. But being okay with acknowledging our half-bakedness in our project, I'm half-baked still, and nonetheless, I'm being fully accepted and embraced and loved by the sweet absolute and by his genuine agents. So, because if we are not open to acknowledge all that, we may not be open to all the things we need to receive, to grow, to transform, to advance. Spirit progress in Krishna consciousness requires openness, openness to receive, but we have to be open first. First, openness will be to be open about who I am, basically. And who I am is a short question, but there is so much to say about that. And it's not enough to reply to that question in like formulaic ways. No, Mara, I know that answer to that question. I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. Next question. Yeah, I'm not against that answer, but the implications of that answer, those are all eternal, infinite. There are so much to say. So yesterday when we were having our unofficial beginning of the retreat, and I was telling some of you, okay, tomorrow our first topic will be vulnerability. It was like, okay. There was some escape hole in the window, and like, I still have time to run away from this place. Some of you literally say that, which I appreciate. That's vulnerability. That's really great. No, it's embarrassing, but it's glorious at the same time. It's gloriously embarrassing that you are able to say, do you know what, Maharaj, when you were saying, I was really thinking, I have time to leave this retreat now. But you are still here. So that's important. Because why the topic of vulnerability unsettles us? Because again, vulnerability is all about being who you are. And it seems that we are not yet okay being who we are. So we are invited to be who we are and show ourselves as such. It feels like unsettling, right? But the point is, it's interesting because we feel uncomfortable being vulnerable. In general, it may happen. Hopefully not, but it may happen. Let's be realistic. We feel uncomfortable being vulnerable, and vulnerability implies showing ourselves as who we are. try to see the correlation. Vulnerability actually means who you are. In other words, you are vulnerable. It's part of your identity. And that's not bad, not just in case. Vulnerability is not a bad word. So in case you have carried the idea that vulnerability is something avoidable, we are here to try to redeem and reclaim some of these terms, some of these realities and experiences. So I will say that both in our ontological composition as a soul, as well as in our unresolved human project, in both cases we are vulnerable. No, like as a soul, you are tatastha shakti. So tatastha means you are vulnerable. You are prone to be influenced by different environments. So in that sense, you are vulnerable. You can be influenced by Maya Shakti and be carried away in a particular direction. And you can be influenced by Swarup Shakti, Bhakti, and be taken in a to a particular shore. But that's the thing. We are vulnerable by composition. I'm prone to be affected by the environment. Again, it's not bad. The point is which is the influence we choose to put ourselves under. And in our particular human nature, generally, on some level or another, most of us, we are vulnerable in the sense of there is, if we want to understand vulnerability as there is frailty, there is brokenness, there is unresolved issues, there is fear, there is doubts. It's okay. Again, remember, it's okay. No? Every time I'm saying that, put in your mind, it's okay. So, because many of the things are the ones who terrify us. So my point with this is, we don't, as I mentioned in the book, it's not so much you have to practice vulnerability, but it's you are vulnerable. The only thing you can choose is to acknowledge that or not. And that will be practice vulnerability. Acknowledge your vulnerability. No, not so much, okay, I will do vulnerability now. No. Like if before that, no, I'm not, I'm invulnerable. In fact, to be invulnerable is pretty boring. If you are invulnerable, nothing can affect you and you're super powerful and Superman. I always tell this story of Superman in the United States. Here you have Superman also. Okay, who created it first? Okay, I don't want to create conflict in the group. So in the very beginning, when Superman was published as a comic, he was Superman literally in capital letters. Nothing could harm him. Nothing could kill him. He defeated every enemy, always winning, perfect, absolute. And the result of that is people got bored. He's too perfect. He's invulnerable. I cannot relate to that. People stop reading it. And they say, what to do to save the business? And they included kryptonite. Let's make him vulnerable. And everyone was like, yes. Right. So that speaks about our collective unconscious. Vulnerability, I feel drawn to that because, yeah, I'm that. Although we may not be able to sometimes to talk about it, but that's who we are. So if that's who we are, better we come to terms with that and we make peace with vulnerability and we can coexist with that. As hopefully we can see today as something ultimately glorious. That's why the title of today's lecture is Vulnerability and Empowerment. It doesn't end in vulnerability, right? So if we learn to acknowledge our vulnerability in a healthy way, in safe space with proper boundaries, and so on and so forth, that can lead up to so much empowerment. If I learn to show myself for who am I without fear, without masks, again, in an environment that is receiving me, accepting me, understanding me, nourishing me, that's empowerment. Yesterday was it yesterday? Srila Prabhupada's arrival to the West?
Yeah.
Okay. It already feels like we have been there, like, right? It's interesting. So yesterday we were celebrating Srila Prabhupada's arrival to the West, right? 59 years already. And we were talking how all of us here somehow, even if you know or not know it, we are all a byproduct of that day, of that first moment. If you play out the implications of his lotus feet setting the Boston, how do you say, Harbor? If you play out the ripple effect and implications and momentum of that, it's us here now. No? So somehow or other, it's impossible to disconnect and see that out of context. No, but in connection to Srila Prabhupada's coming to the West, of course, I always find it very valuable, because sometimes we speak about Prabhupada's empowerment, which of course is impossible to deny. Srila Siddhar Maharaj will describe Srila Prabhupada as a Shakti Avesh avatar. He was the first one to speak about Prabhupada in that way. And even when he was asked, and with type of Avesh, with type of empowerment, he will say Nityananda Avesh. Mm-hmm. No, particularly carrying that wave, ocean of mercy. But as we know, I mean, he was very empowered, but following what we are talking today, before empowerment comes vulnerability. So for me, I always like to go to Prabhupada's intimate moments in the Jaladutta, when he's opening his heart and praying to Krishna with full vulnerability in the famous prayer at the lotus feet of Krishna and many others. And he's really vulnerable there. If you read the spirit of the prayer, he's so humbled and so, in one sense, also uncertain about what will happen, heart attacks in the midst of the ocean, total uncertainty, of course, but one certainty in the midst of a sea of uncertainty, which is the important thing. Everything else will be uncertain, but something is certain, no? And that's Krishna's presence and mercy and shelter. So he was so vulnerable. And he opened himself, his heart, in such a way that Krishna replied to that with full empowerment. And we are the result of, we could put it that way, no? We are all a byproduct of Srila Prabhupada's vulnerability. Because his vulnerability led to a certain empowerment, and that empowerment led to a whole wave of things, and we end up being a consequence of that. But it all began with his vulnerability, right? So just for us to value the power of being vulnerable in a proper way, what can create? It created us. So that's a way of putting it. We are a creation of a very intimate moment of sincere vulnerability. And that's how we can continue to recreate ourselves and co-create with others. It's the same pattern and principle of reality. So that's how Prabhupada presented himself in front of the infinite. No? So total nakedness. Here, who am I? No? We are always naked in front of the infinite. Let's put it that way. That's pretty vulnerable. In the sense, in front of other people, we put masks, we hide, we fake, we perform. We have a long list of garments to... and many other people also play that game, so it's a whole thing of cheating and without bad intention, but it's just kind of unconscious norm. But Krishna, he's seeing us in our nakedness always. He's piercing all through all those layers of makeup we present to him, so to say, and he's seeing us for who we are. And as we will conclude today, unloving us while seeing us in that way. He's not seeing us for who we are and damning us for hiding ourselves so much for so long. Actually, he's feeling full compassion and affection for us. So again, we are naked in front of the infinite. We are vulnerable, in other words, at every moment. You are being naked in front of Krishna. He's seeing you for that, and he's loving you for that. And it's beautiful in its own way. Again, for example, that's why unconsciously when you see like a baby, imagine if someone now enters with a baby of 2 months. My class is over. All attention goes there. Swami Padmanabha disappeared, vulnerability, boom. But somehow you will be taken to a very practical example of vulnerability. Why a baby is so attractive? Because he's so fragile. He's so vulnerable. He's not with signs, hey, I'm so vulnerable, but the very condition is very fragile, very vulnerable, and very attractive. So we are attracted to vulnerability, even if we cannot connect the dots. Oh, I love that baby, but why? You know who that person is. No, in one sense, you are not attracted to the person, but to the condition, to the vulnerable condition. Right? So there is a beauty and a charm in in vulnerability being expressed without fake. A baby is not faking vulnerability. No? He's embodied vulnerability. He's not trying like to, okay, I'm entering this room. I'll try to look nicely for them so they don't realize that I'm what? That I'm naked, that I'm peeing on myself. And he's just, he is. So, yeah, it's charming. Of course, then the baby starts to cry. That starts to look less charming. But that's still vulnerability because he's crying. And we would like to cry, but we don't dare to cry many times because we don't want to show how we actually feel. So when the baby cries too much, it's like, stop mirroring myself. I want to stop you crying because that reminds me of all the tears I'm repressing, what some so to say, right? So anyhow, some baby lessons also. You can learn from Superman. You can learn from a baby. You can learn from anything. And everything is somehow mirroring back vulnerability because we are all vulnerable. So that's a pattern of reality, right? In the book, I refer to the example in the Bible of Adam and Eve, which is very interesting because the two of them are naked in the beginning. So it means vulnerable. And what do they do immediately? They cover. They feel ashamed. I'm naked. I have to hide. Now they cover and then they hide. Interesting. It's interesting. Yeah. And God appears and they're ashamed. No? That's a whole, we need another retreat to talk about shame. Mm-hmm. Maybe next year, let's see. Yeah, because that gets so much in the way of being vulnerable, of accepting that you are even loved. It's toxic shame. I am wrong. Not only I did something wrong, I am wrong. So yeah, that's kind of the pattern, right? Adam and Eve, somehow the story of Adam and Eve shows like the pattern of how conditioned mind acts. No, like we hide, we are naked, we cover, we hide, we feel ashamed, and then we try to fit in. with all our hiding and stuff, we try to somehow fit in, but everyone is still hiding, everyone is still faking. As I also try to make the difference in radical personalism, one thing is fitting in. A very different thing, probably its opposite, is to belong. And nobody needs to fit in. That's the last thing you need to fit in. The first thing we all need is to belong. But sometimes we conflate the two. And that's one of the greatest tragedies. When you actually need to belong, but you express something in terms of fitting in. But to fit in, you need to stop being who you are. That's the very definition of fitting in. Now you have to take a particular form, which is not you, so you fit in. And in order to belong, the very definition of belonging is you need to remain being who you are. The moment you stop being who you are, you cannot belong. Right, and as my dear friend, mentor, Father Richard Rohr will say, in one sense, you don't even need to belong; you already belong. Everything belongs. That's the title of his book. Everything belongs. The problem is that we are not aware of that. So we are trying to fit in, or then we are trying even to belong. You don't need to try to belong; you already belong. You're already accepted by Krishna. You're already loved by him. Everyone. So everything belongs. We will say that in Sanskrit with the term sambandha. Sambandha. Sam means everything and bandha means bonded. Sounds like English. Sambandha. Sam bonded. No. Everything is bonded. Everything is connected with Krishna in the center. So everything belongs. We sometimes are so disconnected from the fact that we are so connected. In that illusion, we just fit in and make a whole life, but we ultimately need to belong, and we already belong. That's why sometimes the great sages and enlightened beings are so they are already belonging, they are fully awakened to the fact that everything belongs, and they see all of us like freaking out, trying to fit in. And it's like, no, you already belong. Why you are exhausted, being so exhausted, doing all this stuff, trying to fit in? There's no need to do that. You belong in the deeper way that you can possibly imagine. That's already happening, but you are just looking another direction. We are so distracted that we conclude, well, I think I have to fit in, and that's how life works. But again, in fitting in, there is no vulnerability. That's the problem with fitting in. There's no vulnerability left. No, it's just faking. No? They have this saying, at least in the US, I don't know, here in the UK, fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. You also have it here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so universal application. But we have a new version for that one, to make a play of words. Not fake it till you make it, but naked till you make it. Naked in terms of vulnerability, right? So again, instead of being ashamed, trying to fit in, hiding, and so on, better to be vulnerable and belong. As difficult as that may be, being vulnerable, wow, belong. That's way easier than exhausting your whole life and trying to fit in, and it never works. Because no matter how much you try to fit in, that doesn't mean to belong. So they're not the same thing. So better to be vulnerable. And from that vulnerability, realize we already belong to each other, to Krishna in the center. Everything belongs. And Krishna himself, let me turn now to God, so to say, Krishna himself is leading by example. Krishna himself is vulnerable. We worship a vulnerable God. Many times we emphasize the Almighty. Now you have this expression, right? Almighty, which is kind of all-powerful. But we have to manage to balance the equation with all vulnerable. Krishna is all-powerful, all vulnerable. Two of them. If we only make God all-powerful, we may become afraid of being all-vulnerable in front of someone all-powerful, but not vulnerable? Oh, my God. So Krishna is all vulnerable. So we should follow accordingly. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, yad charati srishtas tatad vitarujana. Whatever a great man, person does, everyone follows accordingly. So Krishna is leading by example, being fully vulnerable. In which sense God is vulnerable? For example, vulnerability has been defined by a vulnerability expert, but as certain uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Every time, again, we are always vulnerable, but that becomes obvious in those moments when you're at risk, when you feel uncertainty, and when we are emotionally exposed. You are vulnerable for sure. No? And we could say that God, in his own way, unique way, Krishna, Mahaprabhu especially, I will make the case, they are very much into that. In the book, I like to refer to Sri Chaitanya, to Mahaprabhu, as that. No? When Mahaprabhu is Krishna, wanting to taste the heart of Sri Radha. So that's risky project. No. What will happen to Krishna if he tastes the heart of Radha? Radha herself is concerned, like, you don't know what you're asking for. No, she's telling to Krishna, you want to taste my heart? You don't know the intensity of that. Are you sure you want to do that experiment? Krishna said, yes. That's risky stuff. No? So she will embrace Krishna and cover him with her own complexion. That's why Mahaprabhu comes with Sri Radha's complexion. Radha Bhava Dyuti Subhalitam Nomi Krishna Sarupa. Because she cannot even tolerate the idea of Krishna even walking barefoot on the forest and dealing with some pebbles. For her, that's too much. What to speak? She will taste my heart and he will be in ecstasy, falling to the ground, knocking his head onto the walls. We know Mahaprabhu in Gambira is like, it's unbearable for her. She'll say, I will cover you and I will receive all that. I cannot think about yours. But again, it's risky. So Krishna Mahaprabhu is engaging in a risky enterprise, you say? Project? So there's vulnerability, uncertainty, again, uncertainty. What will happen? What's that ocean of emotion that Radha's heart is about? Krishna says, I don't know. That's what he wants to, that's what he wants to taste it. No, Krishna said, what is she, what's the three main reasons for Mahaprabhu to send is, what's the glory of the love of Sri Radha? What's the beauty she perceives in me, Krishna thinks? And what's the joy that she derives from all that? And he concludes, no clue. No, I don't have an idea. So I need to take her vantage point as Mahaprabhu, and Gaurlila starts, quote unquote, it's eternal, but starts as a result of that. So there's uncertainty in Krishna. The Bhagavatam itself, it says Krishna doesn't know the limits of his glories. He doesn't know because there is no limit to his glories. it's unlimited. So there is uncertainty, a form of uncertainty. And emotional exposure is its third level, third point of vulnerability. So Mahaprabhu is that. Mahaprabhu is Krishna engaging in emotional exposure. He's exposing himself to the emotions of Radharani. So pretty vulnerable, pretty much in need. No, vulnerability many times is connected with neediness. I have a need. As Mahaprabhu, Krishna needs to taste Radha's love. So that's very much vulnerable. But as a result of that vulnerability properly expressed, Mahaprabhu becomes the most volcanic face of the Absolute. No? Srila Siddha Maharaj will describe him as a golden volcano of divine love, exploding, erupting in ecstasy with its lava consuming everything on its way. Very poetic. Just try to imagine that. No? That's our Easter Day. No? My God is a volcano. But that volcanic side came from vulnerability first. Remember, Prabhupada, vulnerable in Jaladutta, empowerment. Nityananda Prabhu. God, same pattern. So this is a universal principle. Vulnerability leads to empowerment. So my point is, we all want to relate to the divine. We all want to love God, and love is all vulnerable. So I can, for me, the math is simple. If I want to relate to someone who is all vulnerable, I must be all vulnerable. If not, I won't understand who I'm relating to. If you are all vulnerable and I'm zero vulnerable, I'm not contacting you. I mean, vulnerability is of such nature that you need to be vulnerable to contact my vulnerability. It's not that I'm fully vulnerable and you come absolutely invulnerable and we really get along each other. There will be some like short-circuiting there because we are disjointed. So vulnerability requires vulnerability. That's the power of it. Like the Srimad Bhagavatam, no? Says, Srimad Bhagavatam was written in Samadhi by Vyasadeva in trance. Ideally, ultimately, you will understand a book written in Samadhi by you entering into Samadhi. So we were saying the other day, Bhagavatam describes reality as non-dual in nature. You can only understand reality if it's non-dual. If you live your life in a non-dual way, we'll be talking about that in a few days. So in the same way, we can only relate to someone who is all vulnerable if we are all vulnerable. So that's part of what it implies to relate to Krishna. So God's vulnerability is inviting us to meet him vulnerably, to meet him without masks, basically. That's the only way possible to relate to Krishna. His own vulnerability is leading by example, and it's inviting us, meet me without masks, which again, can be terrifying if we have too many masks put on. And someone tells you, you can just leave all those masks and you can meet without masks. And it's like, I forgot what it means to live without masks. No? But that's the invitation to relate to the divine. No? Be who you are. As simple as that is. You can just relax and be who you are. Can those two things happen at the same time? Can I be who I am and relax? Right? Well, that's the only way possible, because when we try to avoid being who we are, we cannot relax. That's constant anxiety. And maybe we feel more anxiety when we are invited to be who we are. but that's the only way we can actually be living our lives in a relaxed way, so to say. So as terrifying as that may sound, Krishna is willing to meet us without masks. I mean, he is seeing us already beyond our masking. He's loving us for such unconditionally, despite our masks. So that should melt our masks, so to say. The fact that I come to you with 300 masks and you are loving me despite my masks, the power of that love that I'm receiving should like dismantle all that masking more and more. So Krishna is ready to accept us for as we are. He's ready to accept us as we are. But, of course, the question that follows is, are we ready to accept ourselves as we are? That's the question we need to answer. It's not a Krishna issue, so to say. He already is accepting us as we are. So are we ready to accept us as we are? Remember, of course, the answer is many times not. Generally, we are always there with a mask. I was having a conversation with Naval Kishore Prabhu. He's a Brajavasi friend. We did a podcast together this year on surrender. And one part of the conversation on surrender was about, again, Krishna loves you, leave up the mask and surrender to that fact. He told his history, story that is like oral tradition in India. And the person was saying like, how do you say? He said, like, I was selling mirrors in my shop. I open a shop, I'm selling mirrors, and no one customer came. But they started selling masks, and then my whole shop was gone in a minute. So, like, making this point, right? Because mirror is like reflecting back, and you don't want to see masks. Give me 108, please. So that's the point, no? But the point again is Krishna's already loving us with all our mess. Remember, ninth chapter of the Gita, verse number 30, apichetsuduracharo bhajante mamananya bhaksaduri bhasamantabhyasamyapyabhyasitohisa. Krishna there is saying, he's defining who is a sadhu, according to his opinion in the Gita. And as I always like to ask the devotees, no? When you hear sadhu, what do you think? I mostly will say, saintly. I remember one day the devotees were sent to say, pure devotee, nitya siddha, eternally liberated. It was like people when they're selling a painting, who gives more, right? Like, who gives the most and most impossible to attain definition? Sadhu, coming from Golok. Okay, only them are sadhus. But Krishna in the Gita says something very different. Because when we define sadhu as saintly, we imply perfect behavior, perfect everything. And he says, apichet sudaracharo. Even if you behave very bad, that's how he starts. But you are very honest in trying to be vulnerable and give yourself to me. If that's your case, you are a sadhu to me, Krishna says already. Sadhu reva samantabhya. In my opinion, you are a sadhu. We cannot argue with him. He's Bhagavan. He's giving the ultimate definition. But my point is, many times we don't take sadhu in that way, and we create very exclusivistic ideas and overly perfect. And anyhow, it's important to to be okay that Krishna says, yeah, you are a mess. I know, Krishna says, but you are sincere. You are a sadhu for me. So he's saying that. The point is how much we are accepting his acceptance of us, right? So I'd like to conclude. I'm going a little bit beyond the time limit, but I would like to, you know me. Don't get angry at me, Jamuna, please. Just looking, some x-rays coming here. Maharaj, you promise it will be. We started later, everything. Yeah. Kirtan started later.
A little bit.
So I like to, since we are talking about vulnerability, I like to conclude touching a little bit in depth on the topic of Krishna's unconditional love, because that's something very, very important to put in the equation of being vulnerable. Because no matter, again, who we are, where we are, ups and downs, lefts and rights, Krishna's loving you unconditionally. So that's for me the most important foundation on which we can be vulnerable. So I like to begin with one quote from Srila Bhaktivedanta Dev Goswami Maharaj from his book Loving Search for the Lost Servant. So it's a very beautiful quote when he depicts Krishna's unconditional love. So maybe we can close our eyes for just 10, 15 seconds and just try to concentrate on the words and try to understand that this is being said about Krishna in relation to you, to each of you, to each of us. So Srila Siddhar Maharaj says like this, the Lord's search for his lost servants is a loving search. It is not ordinary, but from the heart. And the Lord's heart is not an ordinary heart. Who can estimate what type of search he is engaged in? It is a mad search, an urgent campaign. Although he is full in all respects, still he feels pangs of separation for every one of us, however small we may be. In spite of his supreme position, he has room for us in a corner of his loving heart. This is the nature of the infinite. Srila Siddhar Maharaj ki jai. So, does it feel good?
Yes. Yes.
That's coming from the heart of a true saint. So, again, we cannot argue with that. We must surrender to that, right? So that's how Krishna feels for each one of us. No? It's important to keep that in mind over and over again to counteract the narrative that goes in the exact opposite direction. Like, you are not lovable, you are unworthy, you are useless. Unless and until you become perfect, Krishna doesn't like you. You have to earn, you have to deserve, and only then, hopefully, let's see, you'll belong. You will belong. So somehow or other, we need to destroy that narrative. We need to put dynamite, how do you say?
Dynamite.
And blow that to pieces. So. Because that's not who we are. That's the point. That's the very false myth. So it's very important to understand you are already infinitely loved by Krishna. Because he's infinite love. He's love itself. He's infinite love. He cannot but love infinitely. So that's how he feels for each one of us. So we should learn to redefine ourselves in terms of God's unconditional love. Who am I? As I like to say sometimes, I am someone who is loved by Krishna. You can define yourself. You can look at the mirror every day and say, who am I? I'm the beloved of Krishna. That's true. That's not arrogance. That's what it is. That's Krishna's love, and we are the object of that. No. I'm not what I do. Many times we are more like human doings, not so much human beings. So you have to do a lot and perform and be perfect so someone loves me. You are not your doing. You are your being, who you are, for who you are. You are not what other things about you. You are not public opinion, comments in social media. You are not what people are told. You are who you are in the eyes of God. Not even in our own eyes, because most time we are not that generous with ourselves. So better let's define who am I according to how he is seeing me. Not even to how I am seeing me. Because I may have a bad day and I'm not seeing me very generously. But Krishna remains generous every single day. He remains inviting us, calling us, playing the flute. There is no one single day you will see a picture of Krishna that's like throwing the flute and like, I'm tired of calling you. I mean, I'm fed up with you. No, he keeps insisting. Sri Radha is always showing blessings. Mahaprabhu is always inviting us from the lower to the highest. So the invitation is ongoing. It's an open door for eternity. So, but we again, we have to get rid of all this false, in being vulnerable, we have to be willing to see myself or accept myself for who I am as a beloved of Krishna. One of the main definitions of bhakti on the basis of which Rupa Goswami made his own definition of bhakti, anya vilasita sunyam, is sarvabhadi vinirmuktam tatparatve nirmanam hrishikena hrishikese vanam bhakti ruchit. So bhakti means to get rid Sarva Upadhi, of all false sense of identity. Be Nirmukta. Mukta means to get free. Nirmukta means to be completely free. Be Nirmukta means to become absolutely, totally, hyper, mega, ultra free from all senses of self-identity, of seeing yourself for who you are not. So bhakti entails, part of bhakti means I have to learn to see myself for who I am, and I have to get rid of who I am not. And again, one of the main ways to see myself for who I am is I am a beloved of Krishna. And one of the main false self-designations is I am someone who has to earn, to make effort to earn God's love. That's, you got to get rid of that. Our goal of life is not to be loved by Krishna. Not because he doesn't love us or because it's not important, but because it's already happening. The goal of your life is not to be loved by Krishna. He's already doing that from time immemorial. The goal of life is to love him back. That's the missing part of the equation. Everything else is already happening. So it's important that we, in our vulnerability, try to leave all these masks, in an attempt to earn, to deserve, to perform, to impress. No, I'll try to impress Krishna, I'll try to impress Guru, I'll try to impress. Why you need to impress people? Just be yourself. If that's not enough for some people, then we may need to take some healthy distance from that people. if it's not enough for you that I am myself, sorry, I cannot be more than that. In fact, the Bhagavatam begins with that. First verse is the invocation. Next verse, Dharma Prajita Kaitavo Traparamo Nirmat Saranam Satam. Dharma Prajita Kaitavo. The Bhagavatam begins saying, in this book, Atra, here, all cheating in the name of religion is rejected. There's no place for that. Here we didn't come to cheat each other in the name of Krishna consciousness. All of that may be happening a lot, but that's not the message of the Bhagavatam. In verse 1, it puts the whole discussion in context. Before going to 18,000 verses, it makes the, here, guys, we are not about cheating each other in the name of religion. Oh. No? So, which basically means we are here to be ourselves, to show ourselves without masks. Again, not trying to perform, trying to convince Krishna, please love me. I'm not that bad. Please like me a little bit. No, all that is cheating. You are cheating yourself, and you are trying to cheat Krishna without necessity of that. All that is illusion. So we are trying to lovingly dismantle all that stuff. I even will say, following back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's description of the anartas in Bhajana Kriya, he said one of the main anartas is Swarup Brahma. To have illusion in terms of which is my actual identity. So in one sense, to not know myself as loved by Krishna could be that. It's an anartha. Not to feel guilt about that, and don't create another anartha because of that. But just to understand that that's anartha as an obstacle, as a false value, as a false sense of things, no? But see your anarthas with compassion. No, that's what I'm trying to make also. So yeah, our goal is to love. Our goal is love. But again, in order to be free in love, love entails ultimate freedom. So in order to be free in love, you must know that you are already being loved. Because if you think I'm not loved by anyone and I'm supposed to love, it's difficult. Nobody loves you, and you have to love everyone. It's like, it can be overwhelming. How can I love everyone if nobody loves me? If I'm unlovable, how will I even dare to love someone? It's like I'm powerless. But when you know someone is loving you, and that someone happens to be the most important person of all, then you get some courage to love back. So I think it's very important to wrap up, to get this point, to accept that you are lovable. as Bhaktarasa once made that play of word. When you accept you are lovable, you can become love-able. Mm-hmm. The very word lovable entails those two words, love-able. But I won't, unless and until I accept that I'm lovable, I will be love-disabled. Because, so we need to, that's a long conversation. I'm writing a book on that, so it's dangerous for me to go there because it has no end. But tied to the idea that Krishna loves you is the idea of self-love. There is a place to love yourself in the context of being loved by Krishna. This is a famous quote that I include in Radical Personalism of Saint John of the Cross. He will say, love what God sees in you. That's a beautiful sutra. Love what God sees in you. He's seeing in you something that he's loving, and you should learn to love that. You should learn to love what Krishna is loving in you, in everything. In you included. And as I like to say, it's not that Krishna is seeing something in you that he loves. He's seeing you. It's not that something in you he loves, the rest, right? But there is something lovable, yeah. So, yeah, 0.01%, he's loving that. So get some encouragement from him. No, there's not something. No, he's loving you for who you are. As a soul, like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, as Charyavat, three times. Mm. When he speaks about the soul, he says, it's amazing. Mm. No. So you are a soul. So Krishna is telling to each of us in that verse three times, you are amazing, amazing, amazing. No. Most of us are going through life hoping that one single person tell us you are amazing at least once. And we give them our inheritance, we marry him, like, just tell me I'm amazing once. Krishna is telling you that three times. And he could say, continue the whole Bhagavad Gita saying that word only, but he had to say some other things. But he's saying that, you're amazing, amazing, amazing. I love you. That's Krishna talking to us. So you should learn to love, to accept that and to love that. He's loving me. So I'm amazing. Krishna saying that I can say I'm amazing, but I'm not my own creation. So I have no reason to become proud. Like, I'm amazing. I happen to be amazing. You happen to be amazing for who we are, but I'm not my own creation. That's humbling at the same time, right? So yeah, we have to learn to love what Krishna seeing in us, which is us. Learn to love yourself. And that feels vulnerable again. But so much empowerment can come from that. So anyhow, I like to conclude with one more quote and then one more idea and then one more exercise and and that's it. And we may be ready for maybe closing, and if we don't have too much time for questions in the evening, we will have space for that. But let me share with you a quote from someone that also I like a lot and I appreciate a lot, which was Sadananda Swami. He was one of the first Western disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur from Germany. And I'm close to his Sangha, mostly in Sweden. We always are sharing some of his letters and instructions. So I'd like to share a few words he's sending to one of his disciples. It's a letter in the context of what we are talking. So let's close our eyes again for a minute. So the letter is to one disciple called Hari Priya Dasi, but you just fill your own name in there. So he's telling that to you. So he says, so, dear Hari Priya Dasi, let us agree upon this. No desperate efforts, no wish to be something, whatever it may be, no thinking that one has to be this or that or not be this or that. We are not far from God at all. The Atma is never disjunct from God. He just thinks he were existing separately. And God is very, very close as our dear friend. And he doesn't want us to torment ourselves, but feel that we are never disjoined from him. It is sufficient when we just honestly are what we are. We might try to cheat others or ourselves, But God, Sadananda Swami Ki Jai. So, yeah, some beautiful words from our elders trying to, one way or another, take us to this place of who Krishna is, who actually we are. Because again, if we get the wrong idea about who Krishna is, we get the wrong idea about who we are, and probably we'll get the wrong idea about everything else. So it's important that we lead our lives with the proper notion of how we are being seen by Krishna. And with this idea, I'd like to conclude now, which is the concept of darshan, that I also briefly mentioned in my book. So darshan generally is, we understand many times as seeing. Now, let's take darshan of Thakurji. It's fine. No, let's take darshan. But mostly the idea of darshan is not so much I'm seeing, but I'm being seen. I'm in front of the deities. I'm seeing them, but ultimately I'm being seen by them. So the main meditation is how I'm being seen by Krishna. I may not be able to see him that much, but I can meditate on how I'm being seen by him. And again, he's seeing us in our nakedness with a full, loving, unconditional eye and fully accepting us for who we are, fully receiving us. So I want to conclude on that note on darshan, not like just, it's very healing, very healthy to every time we need just meditate how I'm being seen by Krishna in this moment, in any moment. He's always seeing us in our vulnerability with full and conditional love. So I'd like to conclude with one exercise, which will feel quite vulnerable. And it's necessary, because if not, you didn't understand anything what I talked the last hour. So we need to put that in practice. And each of us, we need to be agents of Krishna's unconditional love now. Because again, it's one thing is, as I remember once a devotee told me, Maharaj, okay, Krishna loves us unconditionally, but what if someone had a terrible life and somehow do not believe that and have never experienced unconditional love and acceptance? So the answer was, well, we have to embody that for each other. We have to behave in a way that we make that person know there is something called unconditional love. There is something called unconditional acceptance and receiving and giving of each other. So I like to conclude with close the door so nobody leaves. Only Charlie can leave if he wants, but he won't, so we will stay here. Don't get scared, nothing extreme. But this is an exercise I've done a few times with devotees in some retreats, and it may feel vulnerable, but it's very empowering if we're willing to do that. And the exercise is as simple as this, and you may already imagine what I'm saying. We all just sit in pairs, like one in front of each other, as much as we can do it in this room. We are lots of people. And we will just glance at each other deeply, try to enter into the other person's world and be received from that. Listen, don't freak out before explaining. I've done that many times. Everyone survived. Nobody killed themselves. Nobody killed each other. Yes, it's vulnerable, but we are all in this together, right? We're in family. Let's create safe space. We are working together. So let's try to open ourselves, to give ourselves to the other and to be received by each other. It's mutual. It's not just about being seen by the other person, but seeing the other person, receiving the other person, being received by the other person. That's what love looks like ultimately. No? So, yes. It's working, no problem. But of course, part of the vulnerability is like, no? But the practical experience I've had myself and everyone who was part of this exercise is that gradually, if there's a minimum openness, and at one point you don't want to stop. No. So that's how it, and you know that's what will happen. So you know that in the deep you are. So hopefully, yeah, we can, it's putting aside masks, of course, putting aside all our walls and just try to be yourself for the other person and trusting that the other person is receiving you, not judging you, not labeling you, not abusing you, but receiving you, and vice versa. Again, you have to receive, you have to give yourself. Yeah?
Okay.
So we'll try for a few minutes. Although, even if I do 2-3 minutes subjectively, it may feel like 3 yogas. But we will try our best. So, was it nice?
Very moving, yes.
Yeah.
Very moving. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, and felt very vulnerable too.
Yeah, of course. That's the idea. Yeah.
The eyes changed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no wonder they say the eyes are the window of the soul, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not about eyes, it's about where the eyes take you. So it's as simple as it is and as powerful as it is if we are willing to be present for one another. So it was just, I don't know how, it was 2-3 minutes, but something is always available, sorry. In Spanish, it's disponible. That's why I went to disposal. These are simple things, but can really, really transforming. So
I felt myself after some time just really relaxing and just sort of accepting.
Mm. Yeah. And again, it's usual, it's normal that in the beginning when we feel some resistance or some like, this is new, it's weird, I never did that. But gradually, as you say, no, there's a higher taste happening, there's something deeper going on. And that's a practical example of what it feels to be vulnerable, and it's okay, and I'm received, and I'm honored, and I'm empowered. Because again, at the end, it's empowerment. It's like, wow, it felt great, and you're all embracing each other. And probably you were angry that I stopped that after 2 minutes. You wanted just to continue. Probably now the rest of the day, tomorrow, we'll see all of you sitting each other. You can do it, of course, feel free. It's not just limited to my exercise after the class. That's something you can incorporate as part of your sadhana, literally. That's sadhu sangha in a very silent and profound way. So anyhow, I want to just conclude with that particular exercise to bring theory to practice, more somatic experience. I don't know if before closing, we are 7 minutes to 12, so I'm trying to keep on time. I don't know if there's any, I mean, in the evening we will have Q&A, not necessarily limited to the topic, but probably will be naturally go into themes related to today's topic. But if there is some urgent comment or question or something you may like to share now before we meet in the other meeting, also we have time, or comment something you may like to share. Nothing need to be a question. You're welcome as well. Tapananandini. Yeah.
You talked at the beginning about it being
right. Sorry, again?
The right, you know, as jivas, we come from the tathashta. So we're always going to be vulnerable because Krishna is vulnerable. It's that understanding of, I'm getting self-lost. I've written it down, but I have that question.
We have the notebook there?
Yes, because you did say Krishna's vulnerable at first. You were talking about Superman, and because he wasn't vulnerable, he's not attractive.
And Krishna is the all attractive.
Yes.
So that means he's all vulnerable. Let's see. No problem.
Being vulnerable here, isn't it?
Yes. No problem.
And I'm feeling like I'm meeting a kindred spirit because this is me. So.
And of course, the question will never appear now in this.
Yes.
It actually comes from the understanding of once we do reach, I know we never reach, you know, a level with dynamics or with you, but I guess, you know, you hear a devotee saying we can fall down again. So
yeah,
we can.
No. Don't edit the video only that part. No. So what's the question? Do we fall from
there? Why is there the difference of some people saying we can.
We can fall?
Yes, because there is that free will.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, I will reply briefly, of course, because that's a big topic, and we're talking the way here, 3-hour drive. That was kind of one of the main themes, because I did a podcast with Namras some years ago on that, the fall of the jiva, and your son Radha Vinod asked me, Maharaj, I watched that podcast, but I don't recall the points. Can you summarize that? So, okay, we had 3-hour drive. We can try our best. So the summary was longer than the original presentation. But in brief, we can say, of course, I'm saying that the jiva is vulnerable as tatashta. But that doesn't mean, and when the Tathasta Shakti fully takes shelter in bhakti, there is still the possibility of. No? But there is its own type of vulnerability. As I'm explaining to how Krishna is vulnerable, how Mahaprabhu is vulnerable, and they are not in Maya at any moment. So in the same way, when we attain the place beyond Maya, that doesn't mean the vulnerability is over. It's just taking its own. Its ultimate form in eternity, let's say. Again, Krishna is, it's on a daily basis in Lila, as I like to say sometimes, in separation from Radha, Krishna feels he's about to die, literally. He never dies, but he's feeling, and she's feeling. So that's vulnerable. They feel like in separation of you, and like, that's its own type of vulnerability in the Lila. So we will have our own corresponding vulnerability in Lila to assist their vulnerability. Because if you are serving and loving Radha and Krishna, you see them about to die, you empathize with that, and you also feel like, I'm about to die as well. But of course, I have to do something in service to them so they don't die. As I like to say sometimes, our service in eternity will be to save the life of God on a daily basis. We are nobody, but somehow the arrangement of Yoga Maya is such that I will be trying to save their lives on a daily basis. Why, I'm nobody, but that's the grace of bhakti. There's lots of vulnerability over there, just in case. But going to the specific question, we don't fall from Golok, we don't fall from Vaikuntha. We have some statements to that, if someone present feels we fall from Vaikuntha, sorry, I don't want to feel anyone uncomfortable. That's my opinion, and I try to substantiate that with scripture. But if someone feels differently, it's fine. I'm not trying to convince anyone or to convert people here, not to stigmatize those who think differently. That's not the point. But I'm just giving my own opinion, take responsibility for my words. So in my understanding of this topic, and studying the scripture, and Krishna himself says repeatedly, nobody fall once you attain there. And Prabhupada himself, of course, he has said a few times in some conversations, we fall, but also in the Bhagavatam, in his books, in his commentaries, 7th canto, 1st purport, he said, it is a fact, nobody falls from Vaikuntha. So that in itself, it's a whole conversation that, okay, you have two statements that oppose each other. You fall, nobody falls. It's not like, okay, cherry pick your favorite one. That's not the ideal way to reach Siddhanta, but just to integrate, reconcile, harmonize, and whatever doesn't align with scripture, previous acharyas, well, we can understand that in a more relative way, which never downplays, in this case, the acharya, right? And the expression back to Godhead, which you mentioned that one, that's an interesting expression, and Srila Siddhar Maharaj loved a lot, of course. All these last 2 months, I've been listening like to all the audios I have of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, which are a lot, and he is so much the expression, back home, back to Godhead, back home, back to Godhead, a lot, probably more than Prabhupada. Yeah. He really liked, you know, when he likes some things that Prabhupada say, he, like, out of affection, he will repeat them, and it's so beautiful to hear him saying that, and you can feel the endearment.
Yes.
Yeah. Krishna consciousness, he will use Krishna consciousness also a lot, many times, that you could feel from where that's coming and the love between them too. But the point is that the expression back to Godhead, which sometimes is understood in, just if you take the quote, means, okay, you have been there, you are just now, you have to go back. But Prabhupada's, the origin of that quote, how Prabhupada is using that, and you have this magazine, Back to Godhead, if you read issue number one of the magazine, he's sharing from where the title is coming, and that comes from the Archbishop of Canterbury. No, he's an English Archbishop at that time, and he's saying there, we have turned our backs to God for a long time, and now it's time to go back to him. That was the context of the phrase. You have given your back to God, and now go back to him. He's not saying we fell from here, and you have to... So that's the context. And he's Prabhupada's quoting that letter in issue number one of the magazine. So I'm not just creating, I'm just saying what he's... So if you understand from that place, back to Godhead is not speaking about falling and returning or something to that effect. Because again, what can make you fall from Vaikuntha? If you tell me, I don't know, Maya, the gunas, envy, but there's nothing of that there. Bhagavatam makes that very clear. There's no Maya and Vaikuntha and spiritual. So there's no way that there's some infiltrate agent there and like it's like pulling people down. And it can be a pretty anxiety ridden place. No, if you, ridden means full of, yeah. If you are in a place where at any moment everyone can fall, you can call that Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means without anxiety. No? Imagine if we are all there in the Leela playing. And where is Tapananandini? Oh, he fell to the material world. He was curious or he became, he wanted, we lost her. No? That's tragedy in the Leela. That cannot happen. No? And at any moment, and maybe you're the next. No? So you cannot call that place Vaikuntha. You call it Sakunta, which means full of anxiety. So anyhow, there are many ways we can try to explain that. Yeah. It sounds, as I like to say, a text out of context becomes a pretext.
Yeah.
No? Sometimes we, without any bad intention, but we end up justifying things in a way that were not originally meant. Yeah. Thank you for the question. Okay, 12:03. So something else, urgent question? If not, we can continue talking later today in between. So just to conclude, and before I forget, so we will meet again this evening at 6 p.m.
Yeah.
Today we're having Q&A, which again is open, but if you have questions from today or further reflections that during the day have been coming, we'll meet at that time. Something that I'm thinking, we can meet at 6, but before starting with the kirtan and the class, we can do some journaling all together about today's theme of vulnerability, allow a few hours for the idea to be further ruminated and your experiences, whatever has happened, and we can get together, I don't know, for like 10, 15 minutes and just write non-stop. This is a very interesting exercise. Not write without just like thinking how to write it fancily. We won't be showing that to anyone. It's just for ourselves. But an exercise of experience. What vulnerability means to you now, today? No, and we can get together at 6 for that. Let's try to be punctual so we don't have to be waiting. So we start all together and we conclude. And then after that, we carry that momentum into the Q&A. If that's fine with you.
Yeah.
So maybe we can write, or if someone has a more, how to say, visual, artistic imaginary, someone may like to draw something, whatever. So, but that will be at 6. So we do that at 6 for 10, 15 minutes. Some kirtan, hopefully sankirtan, some sankirtan, and then we meet and so on. And lunch will be at between 1:30 and 2. Hopefully. I'm finishing 12:05. So maximum 2:05 we have lunch.
Yeah.
Okay. Sri Satchinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai, Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai, Gaur Premanandi. Jai Panchakalpataru Vishagri Pasindhuvyai Vachapatita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Nantakoti Vaishnavindaki Jai.